stop waiting to hear from someone else that you matter and start hearing from God that you matter. And that will change your day right now.
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javet, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javet. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming back Naeem Fazal. Naeem is the founding and the lead pastor of Mosaic Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. He is a Pakistani born and raised as Muslim in Kuwait. He came to the United States shortly after the Gulf War and had a supernatural experience with Christ that changed the course of his life. He was ordained at Seacoast Church in Charleston and is the author of Ex-Muslim and Tomorrow Needs You. Thank you again for joining us, Naeem. It was a blessing to have you on our show last time. So I want to welcome you again to our show.
Oh, man. Yeah. Love that conversation. Love to be back. Love that I'm back again. So, yeah. But the question I want to ask you is, should we do this interview in Urdu? Because we both speak it.
Oh, that would be awesome. But nobody will understand, right? Our audience definitely will not understand that.
But see, they'll just think it's great.
Yeah, that would be cool. So if you missed the previous episode, again, I will remind you in a minute, but please do listen to the previous episode. There you're going to hear about his family background, a little bit about his immediate family, his children, his wife, him, what they're doing. But today our conversation is about his new book. Naeem, you wrote another book. The name of the book is Tomorrow Needs You, Seeing Beauty When You Feel Hopeless. In the previous episode, you shared that you were raised Muslim and later had an encounter with Jesus. How has God taken you from a fearful past to a beautiful future?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Great question. There was a 10-year period between the first book and the second book. And the first book, we talked about in our earlier podcast, that it was filled with miraculous stories, you had mentioned about this honeymoon phase in your relationship with God, which is so true. And so the second book that I was thinking of writing, I never wrote. And then eventually I wrote this book, which has now become my second book, called Tomorrow Needs You. And it's because of a very traumatic experience with our family. We were on cloud nine when God was doing all these miraculous things. But then some things started happening that were just confusing. You know, the God of miracles, it seemed like he was not around anymore. Like, my mom got deported to Pakistan after 9/11 for 3 years, and we didn't know when she was going to be back. Then there are things in my life at church. There was some really deep betrayal. There was a lot of pain and grief and sorrow. And then my dad, he just really got in a very low place and tried to end his life. And he was unsuccessful. But when talking to him and about that process and where he was, he said something to me, which is why I wrote this book. He just said, no one needs me, Naeem, He said, no, you don't need me. I'm useless. I have no meaning. No one needs me. And I remember saying, I was like, Abuji, of course we need you, We need you. We need you. Your grandchildren need you. We need you. Look around. I remember telling him, look around, see all the beautiful things you have. Like we have all come to Kuwait, from Kuwait to the U.S. We're all settled here. Everybody's having good lives. There's so much beautiful things, so much things to be happy about, to be grateful for. And he couldn't do it. So I believe that so many people struggle with that, and they struggle with this idea. They look around, they can't see anything worth living for. And they go, no one needs me. And so that's why I wrote the book, to remind people that this idea that no one needs you is a lie from the enemy. And it starts by you not being able to see the beauty around you, and then you don't create things that are beautiful. And so that's why the book is really about how God shows us where, tomorrow doesn't need you. And it starts by you seeing beauty and seeing and creating beautiful things. And in fact, in the book, I talk about how actually beautiful things have the power to dismantle the most fearful and hopeless things in our life.
As Christians, we talk about having more faith. But you wrote about, and I quote, doing all of this not with more faith, but with beauty. What does it mean to use beauty as a lens for healing and transformation?
So, when you think about beauty, I'd throw in some Urdu words here. You have khubsurat, obviously, which means beautiful, but then you also have pyari, which means, lovely. So there is no doubt that there is a connection to what we feel is beautiful, what we think is beautiful. That's why some people say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, because beauty, what it does is it basically says, I'm putting more attention onto this thing. I love this thing more than the other thing. I like this thing. I'm more attracted to this thing. So beauty in the purest way is a sense of something that is created or is out of love, or something you think is lovely. So the essence of beauty is like love. You can't, for example, when people make something out of passion and love for the art, they make something, it's beautiful to them. They're like, oh, this is good. This is amazing. It's out of love. So think about it. When God created us, or the story it tells us about, he said, every time, have you noticed? Every time he creates something, he looked back and said, oh, that's good. You know who does that? Like, artists do that. People who create things, they do that. Like, in us, like, I am an artist, I paint, and I know people who do other things with visual arts or any other, or create things. When they create something, they look back, or they listen to it, or they watch it, they go, oh, that's good. Oh, that's good. So when you read the account of Genesis, what is God saying? Oh, that's good. Oh, that's good. And then he makes us and he goes, oh, this is really good. Like, what does he do? He is speaking the language of a creator and an artist. That's what he's doing. So when the creator makes us like that, you and I were created out of love. And he looked at us and he said, now that's beautiful. That's awesome. So I think that number one, understanding that we're created with love and we're beautiful to him. We are his masterpiece, like the scriptures tell us. If we don't understand that, we're not going to understand how to dismantle and conquer fear in our lives, because we are told, and again, this is where religion comes into our faith, in the teachings of Jesus. See, in religion, it's all about you. It's your devotion. And then it's your faith. If you don't have the devotion, if you don't do the right things, if you don't do worship correctly, if you don't perform, you're not gonna get. You gotta perform. You gotta perform. And what you gotta do is you gotta have more faith. You gotta have more faith. Why is this not happening? Because you don't have any faith. You don't have any faith. And that's never the case with Jesus, because in John, it says there's only one thing that casts out fear. It's not faith, it's perfect love. Perfect love casts out all fear. And then he says, and if you still fear, it's because you're doing something wrong. You don't have God's love perfected in you. Like, you still are not convinced that God has this perfect love for you. That's why you keep fearing. What he's saying is, you're trying to muster up faith. So in the book, I say this. I said, here's the truth of it. The truth of it is the beautiful things in our life that give us the power to dismantle the most fearful things in our life. And actually, the practice of this, the actual practice of this, is found in the heart of the teachings of the scriptures and the life of Jesus. So in Hebrews 12, Paul says this. He says, here's what you got to do. Here's how the life you got to live. You have to look at Jesus. He says, we looked to Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. Look to Jesus, the author and finisher of faith. And then he says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross.
Yeah.
So right there, he tells us, number one, who to look to. Number two, what to do. He said, let me tell you what Jesus did. Jesus put a joy in front of him that gave him the power to endure the cross. For the joy set before him. See, that practice right there is the heart of this book in terms of really living out, moving out of despair, moving out of trauma, moving out of betrayal. And this book is pretty, Tomorrow Needs You is not just stories, my stories. It's stories of people who've come out of sexual abuse, come out of addiction, come out of suicide. It's a hard-hitting book. I'm trying to drag people out of darkness into the light, because the way you do this, the way you get unstuck, the way you move out of being paralyzed with fear is this: you put a joy before you,
yeah,
to endure your cross.
Yeah.
So Jesus saw a beautiful humanity that was worth dying for.
Right.
So that's why he says, you know what? I don't want to drink this cup. I don't want to drink this cup. Even to the last time, remember last night, he was like, I don't want to drink this cup. Yeah. But your will be done, your kingdom come. So he was like, I'll do it. I'll do it. I see something. I see a humanity that has the Spirit of God inside of them, and they become the temple of the Holy Spirit. And it's worth dying for.
You describe fear as our biggest enemy, disguised as worry, uncertainty, or discouragement. How do we begin to recognize fear when it's hiding in our everyday lives? How do we begin to do that?
Yeah, I think part of it is understanding how it works. And because the symptoms of fear, the way it plays out in our life is very different. You know, anxiousness, for example. You know, some people are anxious because we twitch a lot, you know, like people, if they're sitting there, they're just twitching, they're just shaking. That's one way. There are people who will eat their way through anxiousness. There are people who will do multiple things. Some people, they're actually scared, but they get angry. So they're mad all the time, or they get angry. The easy reaction is anger. Anger is just so, it's because you're afraid. Like, that's the problem. Like, you're afraid of this. That's where you're acting out. And it's so tough because no one wants to really admit it. You know, no one wants to admit that they do that, because fear seems to be something that says, you know, well, you're weak if you are afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you are afraid, or you deal with fear. What's wrong with you? Like, what's wrong? Why do you have that emotion? And if you notice in the scriptures, you know, even in, like, for example, in Joshua, you know, Joshua, there's that passage in Joshua where God talks to Joshua and says, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. Haven't I told you, be strong and courageous? Haven't I told you, be strong and courageous? And he does it like 6-7 times. And he says, and I'll go with you, you know, I'll be with you wherever you go. You know, I'll every step you take, I'll be with you. And the question is, why is he telling Joshua, be strong and courageous? Because Joshua's scared. Because Joshua has fear.
Right.
It's so much fear. And he's like, do not fear. Do not fear. God never wanted us to pretend we're not afraid. That's why he keeps on saying, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Because being afraid is a very human and natural thing. And in fact, in the book, I talk about it. Fear will make you do all kinds of different things. And you have to ask, why are you doing this? And then you can track it back to, okay, I'm doing this because I'm trying to manage my fear. And it's also scientifically proven that if you go through a season and you're watching the same shows that you watched before, if you're eating the same food that you want to eat before, if you're doing the same old habits, you're managing your anxiety, because it's predictable outcomes. And your life right now is not predictable. Like, there's so many moving parts right now. So people go back to watching old things. You listen to old music. You don't, everything in the past. Why? Because you're trying to normalize your senses. You're like, okay, I know this is predictable. I know this is, in a strange way, I, you know, the my day is going to be crazy, but I can eat the same food because I know I will have the same result again. Like, I just need my life to be normal. Like, I need to manage, I need to be in control. And, you know, all so that's how when you understand, when you feel that you have to be in control, fear is coming. You feel that your emotions are very high and up and down, it's fear and anxiety and worry in your life. Those are those things. And then you have to start moving towards like, okay, how do you navigate fear? And I talk about putting a leash on fear.
So, what does it practically look like to live as if fear has no hold over you? Can you
Yeah.
share a personal moment when you consciously chose beauty over fear?
Yeah. So I would say, like, so when I talk about this, the way you learn to do this is, number one, you have to put a leash on
Right.
fear. Whenever you put a leash on a pet, the power dynamics right there are clear, right? Whoever's holding the leash is the one in control. The one that's it's around its neck is the one being controlled, right? Like, that's what it is. Now, I remember my first child, when Asher was born, we were on a cruise or whatever, and someone gave me this thing that was it was like a harness for a baby with, it looked like a leash. I was like, I felt so awful. I was like, I don't want to do this. I do not want to hold my baby like this. And I know other people who have like multiple kids, and they're like, they look like they're walking pets, you know. It's so awful. It feels so awful. But fear does that. Fear is only good if you have it on a leash. It's not good when it's holding the leash. So when it's making you do things, you know, like fear says, I'm not going to say yes to this. I'm not going to be a proactive. I'm not going to take this step. I'm not going to obey God. I'm not going to do this. I'm not. So when fear says, no, go this way. No, go this way. No, go this way. Let's go this way. What it's doing is, your fear has got you around the neck, and it's telling you where to go. And so if, when I haven't given an opportunity, or if I go, okay, I need to text so and so something, and I think in my head, I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't know. And then I think, okay, why do you not want to do that? Why do you not want to do that? Well, I think that they'll just think I'm da da da. I said, is that, am I afraid? Yeah, I am. Okay. As soon as I think, oh yeah, I'm doing this because I'm afraid, then I do the opposite of it. I do it. Because as soon as I give in, that leash goes on me. Does that make sense? That leash goes on me. So every time I go, I don't want to try this. But this book, writing this book, oh, it was so hard. It was so hard. Every chapter, every time I would start it, even starting it was just so like daunting. It was like, man, you can't do this. You can't do this. The first book, it was my story, obviously, but I had a writer, a collaborator. So what that means is that she actually physically wrote the book. So she is a gifted writer. So ex-Muslim, when you see the title and you see the book, it says Naeem Fazel with Kitty Murray, who's the writer. Well, this book is just me, Naeem Fazel by Naeem Fazel. So the problem is, I have dyslexia, dysgraphia, and dyscalculia. So I have versions of those where I mess up numbers, I mess up words, I can't, I have a learning disability. So I couldn't even read it for Audible. I couldn't read my book for Audible because I make too many mistakes. I change words around, I change the sentence structure and all that things. So writing it, typing it was just so hard to do, but I knew I was supposed to do it. I knew that it was a beautiful thing to do. I had to do it, and then I had to do the opposite of what my emotions told me, because I knew if fear had anything to do with it, I needed to do the opposite.
You mentioned gratitude, forgiveness, and kindness as practices that cultivate joy. Remember, we talked about putting joy ahead of you. Jesus said, did the same thing. So, why do you think these often feel so hard to access when we are gripped by fear?
Oh yeah, because so here's the, for example, let's take two, kindness and gratitude, right? When you're gripped by fear, like I said, fear can come in with through worry as well, right? Can worry as well. And when you're worried about something, and when you're anxious about something, and when you're concerned about something, you end up being stressed out about it. Like, there's too much negative emotions going through your brain and your heart. You know, that's what happens. So what happens is that it's like this. It's like, you know, when your body is deprived of food, you get cranky. When you're in a bad mood when you haven't fallen asleep for a while. You know, as people who've had kids, you know there's a season where you're losing your mind. It's not because you don't have faith. It's not because of that. It's just that you're physically exhausted because you haven't gotten sleep. And what happens is that your behavior changes, your mood changes, your emotions change, everything changes. And simply because you didn't get enough sleep. That's it. And so what happens with worry is that when you are worried about something, when you keep rehearsing a negative thing, you keep rehearsing it and rehearsing it and rehearsing it, you all of a sudden don't understand the stress of that on your soul and your spirit. It's like holding a glass of water, right? You hold a glass of water, you can hold it for a long time.
Right.
Right? And how heavy is it? Not that heavy. Not that heavy. But if I told you, I need you to hold it for a month.
Right, right.
It'll get super heavy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It'll get super heavy at the end of the day. But it was nothing. It was nothing when I held it the first couple of minutes. So worry and stress is like a glass of water you hold for a minute. You worry about something, you hold it for a little bit in your mind, in your soul, it's nothing. But if you have it there, if you're worried about the same thing for a month, you know how tired your soul is? Yeah. And so when we're tired, what happens? We get unkind. That's the first thing that happens. You have no grace for anybody. You just get unkind. So yeah, you have to use kindness because if you, you're not grateful about anything because you're like, you can't see anything. You don't have, you know, because you've allowed fear, anxiety, worry in your life, you can't see beauty. You can't see, you don't act, you're not kind to the world. You're not kind to people. You're not grateful for the people. You don't see God's kindness. That's why Jesus, when he talks about how not to worry, what does he say? He goes, hey, look at the birds. Yeah. Like, what? What do you mean, look at the birds? Like, he's basically saying, see beauty. Hey, look at the birds. What do you see?
Right.
What's happening there? Mm-hmm. You see they're flying around? Who did that? God did that. Hey, look what they're eating. Who provided that? God did. So he's basically telling them not to have more faith. He's saying, just look at them. Hey, look at the flowers. I don't want to look at a flower. No, look at a flower. Look how beautiful they are. Yeah? Okay. God did that. You don't think he can provide clothes for you? Like, and that's what Jesus did. That's what we have to do. We have to intentionally use kindness and gratitude, and, you know, to do that. Yeah.
You also suggest people surround themselves with positive influences. For someone who feels isolated or unsupported, what's the first step to finding those life-giving relationships?
Some of us, sometimes based on your personalities, we require a certain number of friends. Some people require a lot of friends, superficial even, but they require a lot of friends. They want to know people. They want people to know them.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are very content with just one or two people knowing them, and they're good. They're good.
Yeah. In
both of those cases, though, the question is, okay, the kinds of people that we are surrounding ourselves with. It's tough when you once surround yourself with people. It's easy to, because we want to be kind, we don't set up good boundaries. We don't set up, we're not that picky. Like, you can be picky, but you have to have levels of boundaries. Like, for example, Jesus had boundaries. Like, so he had his 12 and he had his 3, you know, and then he might even have one with Peter. But he had levels of intimacy with each and every one of them. So he kind of knew what to do there. And I think the people need to know, number one, evaluate the people that are around you and evaluate who gets to really speak into your soul. Who gets to really do that, you know? So like, for example, the story of Peter and Jesus. Peter is the only person who is called the devil. right? Why is that? Because Peter And Jesus were close, that Jesus had allowed him very close to his heart. Peter suggested it, not Judas, not anybody else. No, Peter suggested it. And because Peter suggested it, he was like, get away from me. Because basically he's saying, you telling me to do this is very tempting than someone else suggesting. Get away from me. You're being used by the enemy. And see, do you see that level? So there are people in our lives that we've allowed in to speak into our souls who never should be allowed in. They should just be friends. People you know, people you hang out with, maybe work with. But they shouldn't be, because if they suggest something and they're close to your heart, you'll end up doing it. Does that make sense? So not just pick your friends, but pick who gets close. Who gets, and they don't, and not a lot of people need to get close.
Who is empowered to speak into your life that way is interesting. You're right. All right, so the picture of the future is where failure and rejection are stepping stones. What helped you reframe those painful experiences in your own life? Do you have a story or two?
The best story I can tell you is just recently that has happened. So my daughter graduated from high school, and her ceremony, her graduation ceremony, was just the other day. I was also the commencement speaker. So unfortunately, I couldn't be just that. I was also the speaker of the event, and which was a beautiful thing. But here's what happened. So she was one of the students that gave speeches, and they asked her to introduce me.
Introduce you, right?
Right after her speech, she introduced me and I spoke, which was, I think a terrible thing because I was like emotionally, I was a wreck already, But her speech answers your question. I didn't realize how much of a learning disability I had until my daughter was diagnosed by one. And when we started doing research early on with her and found out that she was. And then helped her. Her education was through a Montessori school, which really helped her. I didn't have that opportunity. But her speech was talking about being bold enough, courageous enough to talk about your disabilities. That was her talk.
That's
And
awesome.
so I feel like because I have been open in the last 10 years about my disabilities and my issues and my imperfections and flaws and failures. I've seen my kids be confident in that
That's good.
and to
That's a
speak
good
to their
story.
peers and empowering other people with any kind of disabilities to not feel that they're less than. And so that I think I wanted that, that's what I wanted. I wanted like I didn't want to be confined by my fears and my flaws, and I wanted people to see that. But it's another thing when your own, daughter is inspired and has that same message because of, what you've done.
I can see that future picture, which was built on these stepping stone of failure and rejection. I can see in this story, and I hope the audience is able to see that too. Let me ask you this: why is the need to be needed as such a powerful concept? And how can someone rediscover that need when they feel unseen or unimportant? And how can we come alongside someone and help them feel needed?
Oh my gosh. That was three questions. You know
Right, I know. It's all about,
that, right?
yeah.
No, the great questions though. People want to be significant, right? They want to be significant. Significance. The word significant literally means to be being worthy of attention. That's it. Feeling being worthy of attention, being worthy of attention. Being significant says, I just want to feel like I'm worthy of attention. That's all. That's a great thing. The problem is that because we want to be significant, we think success will do it and popularity will do it. So because we have a God-given need to be worthy of attention, because we are made worthy. God has given us attention. We just think, well, we need it. And so we go after success. We go after popularity. So it's the likes, it's the on social media, it's the follows on social media. Yeah. It's whatever, because there's a need to be, because all we're trying to say is, am I worthy? Am I worthy of some attention? And that's what they're trying to say. Am I worthy? Is my life worthy of attention? Am I doing anything that that people will find, because they really want significance? But the problem with success is based on accomplishments. So you have to keep being successful. You have to keep accomplishing to fulfill success.
Right.
If success is what feeds you, well, and that's why it's a never-ending thing. And God never made us for success. He made us to be significant. And so that's the big difference people really need to have. And to ask ourselves, hey, why am I chasing this dream? Why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? That makes sense.
Yeah. How would you encourage someone who feels like they have already missed their tomorrow because of failure, disability, or loss?
Oh, that's a great question. Easy. If they're listening to this podcast, they haven't missed it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Yeah. If they're listening to this, they haven't missed it. They haven't missed it. I mean,
awesome.
I mean, the scriptures are filled with stories of all these people, especially in the Old Testament. They're so old when they started doing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Moses, we go, Moses came. Moses was 80 years old.
Yeah.
When he stepped into, led the promised land, led people out of the promised land. I mean, these people have been old. I mean, so I think the God is the God, like that's the beautiful thing with God, who's not confined with time. He's not confined with time, and he's not confined with your timetable either. So, your most significant mark, your most significant ministry, your most significant impact could be not even starting today, maybe after 10 years. It could still be. So does that make sense? Like, you've missed your prime. There is no missing of your prime with God. There isn't. And there isn't no missing, like, well, because of all the things you've done, God couldn't do this. I mean, you know, I mean, we talk about leadership lessons from Moses. Moses was a murderer. Like, he murdered someone. Like, but we never talk about it now. You know, we talk about the fact that he, you know, stepped in and stepped and rescued all these people. And he did amazing things, but that was all God. And he did it, and he was so old. So your time is not past. Tomorrow does need you. You matter more than you think you matter. And that's the big thing. The big thing is stop waiting to hear from someone else that you matter.
Right.
And start hearing from God that you matter. And that will change your day right now.
If listeners wants to get in touch with you, Naim, or find your books, what are the easiest ways?
Yeah, finding my books will be Amazon. That'd be the best way to find them. And in touch with me, I'm on social media. I'm pretty active on Instagram and also a little bit on Facebook as well. But yeah, those two places you can interact, you know, send messages. And I'll be sure to respond.
Great. Our listeners can find all of that in the episode's descriptions or on our podcast website as well. And for the last thing, this is the fun thing. Because we talk about heavy topics, I would like to ask you to tell us a joke. Last time I did not ask you because I knew that I was going to bring you back to our show again. So tell us a joke to lighten the mood. This should be the best joke in the world. Because
she has my
power
gosh.
Of two jokes.
You want me to tell you a joke or something that I actually did that was pretty hilarious?
Both are acceptable. Yes.
Okay.
Hilarious part.
The real part was, so, you know, because English is not my first language, you know, there's a lot of, you know, funny things about that. But I was also learning how to preach, you know, and so I remember early on as I was listening to, you know, other preachers and all that. And one of the preachers that I listened to would always say, he would use a phrase when he was talking about if he had an argument with his wife. So he would say, you know, hey, the other day, my wife and I were having intense fellowship. He would call it intense fellowship. And so the joke was, oh, intense fellowship means that they were arguing, you know, right. Intense fellowship. So I was like, oh, that's, you know, that's cute, you know, and all that. So one time I was speaking to a crowd of like a lot of people, and it was a lot of single adults there. And I said, you know, I think I, in my head, I think I'll say that joke too. So I said, you know, the other day, my wife and I, we got into a pretty heated situation. It was really heated. And I said, yeah, so we were having some pretty intense, intimate fellowship. instead of intense fellowship, uh-huh. I said intimate fellowship, uh-huh. which means something totally yes, different.
Of course.
And so I just kept on talking about it.
Right.
And people thought I was talking about
sex. Intimate fellowship.
Fellowship, yes, the whole time. I didn't realize till the whole time. People were laughing. They obviously knew. I did not know. I thought I didn't make a mistake. My wife was in the crowd, and I thought I was like, you know, I thought it was great. And then it ended, and she was like, "Do you know what you said?" And I said, "What?" I said, "She said you said intimate fellowship. That means something else." And I was like, "Oh my gosh!" And so yeah, that was. So I don't use that anymore.
Thank you so much for being on the show again. That was Pastor Naeem Fazel. And thank you to all our listeners. We truly could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at OurUrbanVoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcast.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.